Good evening. The House prepares to debate the $900 billion COVID stimulus bill. The Attorney General says no systematic voter fraud. A virus mutation strikes fear in the United Kingdom. And a report says cops blew it policing protests this summer. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Monday, December 21st, 2020. Attorney General William Barr used his final public appearance to undercut President Donald Trump on multiple fronts Monday. Barr says there's no reason to appoint a special counsel to look into the 2020 election or to investigate President-elect Joe Biden's son.
You know, there are fraud in unfortunately, in most elections. I think we're too tolerant of it, and I'm sure there was fraud in this election. But I was commenting on the extent to which we had looked at suggestions or allegations of systemic or broad-based fraud that would affect the outcome of the election, and I already spoke to that, and I stand by that statement.
But about the idea of appointing a special counsel, would you answer a question about whether you believe there's enough there, even with your what you've already said, do you believe there's enough evidence to warrant a special counsel to investigate that, perhaps Sidney Powell or someone else?
Well, if I thought a special counsel at this stage was the right tool and was appropriate, I would name one, but I haven't, and I'm not going to.
Barr also pushed back on a suggestion from a White House advisor that the Department of Justice seize voting machines in swing states and redo the election.
I see no basis now for seizing machines by the federal government. You know, a wholesale seizure of machines by the federal government. And I, you know, off the top of my head, I'm not going to opine on a constitutional issue as far as the pardon power goes.
Trump and his allies have filed roughly 50 lawsuits challenging election results, and nearly all have been dismissed or dropped. He's also lost twice at the United States Supreme Court. And President-elect Joe Biden on Monday received his first dose of the coronavirus vaccine on live television in an effort to convince the American public the inoculations are safe.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Did you get to pick his Band-Aid?
Oh, I've got a Band-Aid.
It's one thing to have the vaccine show up at a hospital. It's another thing to get the vaccine from that vial into a needle, into an arm. And there's millions of people out there that are going to need this. Frontline workers first.
From Canada to India, one nation after another has banned flights from Britain because of alarming reports the COVID-19 virus is mutating into new forms. The new variant of the coronavirus spreading rapidly in Britain carries mutations that could mean children are as susceptible to becoming infected as adults. An infectious disease scientist at Oxford, Peter Horby, says we now have high confidence that this variant does have a transmission advantage over other virus variants that are currently in the UK. The Surgeon General of the United States is Jerome Adams. Speaking to reporters outside the White House, he confirmed the mutation, but adds it hasn't affected the vaccine.
Viruses mutate. It's what they do. SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus which causes COVID-19, has mutated dozens of times already this year. That doesn't mean it's more dangerous. It doesn't mean it's more contagious. So we're working with the WHO. We're working with the CDC. We're working with the UK to figure out whether this new strain of virus is going to behave any differently. But I just talked to Dr. Collins, who heads the National Institutes of Health. So far, nothing looks like it's going to change the effectiveness of this vaccine, number one. And number two, even if there is a mutation at some point which changes the effectiveness, it'll be just like the seasonal flu vaccine that we know how to tweak. We know how to do this. We will continue to follow, and we need to make sure we're following the science in making recommendations and decisions, policy decisions, based on what our scientists tell us.
World Health Organization epidemiologist Maria von Kerkhoff spoke about the new variant in Geneva earlier today. She says information is coming, but agrees the vaccine hasn't been compromised.
What we understand so far from the data that's been reported by the UK is that they have reported an increase in transmission in this variant. But I want to put that into context, because what they have told us is that they're looking at an increase in the reproduction number, which is the number of people that one infected individual transmits to another, of an increase of about 0.4. So it's an increase of moving from 1.1 to 1.5. So there is an increase in transmission that they're looking at. Now they're trying to determine how much of that is associated with the variant itself, as well as behavioral differences in individual that this variant has infected. So they're still working through that right now. In terms of disease, in terms of severity, the information that we have so far is that there isn't a change in the clinical presentation or severity from this variant. But again, the work is still underway that they're looking at a number of factors, including patients who are hospitalized with this variant as opposed to the wild type, the other viruses circulating. And the studies around the antibody response are currently underway. As we speak here today, scientists in the lab are working on these types of studies and looking at the antibody response, and we expect results from those studies in the coming days and coming weeks. The UK has informed us that they don't believe that there's an impact on the vaccine, so that's good news. But again, there's a lot of information coming out, and there are a lot of studies that are ongoing.
Maria Van Kerkhoff is an epidemiologist with the World Health Organization. And Surgeon General Adams says he's already gotten his shot, adding it's important to show people of color the vaccine is safe and Americans are not guinea pigs in an experiment, as has happened in the past.
The Office of the Surgeon General oversaw the Tuskegee experiments, where for 40 years black men were denied treatment for syphilis in a study in which they were enrolled. So I wanted people to see me get it publicly. And I had a little bit of a sore arm for a day or two, which is normal after vaccinations. I had that after my flu shot too. It's normal for people to get a little bit of headache or fever occasionally after a vaccination, because that's your body reacting to the vaccine and making antibodies. It's actually a sign that it's working. I didn't have any of that. So all I had was a little sore arm. I feel great physically and I feel great emotionally, because many people know my wife is battling cancer. My mother and father have chronic medical conditions. I have severe asthma, and I'm traveling all over the country to surge testing sites. So it gives me a little bit of reassurance to know I can protect the people around me and that I can more safely do my job, in addition to the fact that, again, I feel great having gotten the vaccine physically.
Surgeon General Jerome Adams. But House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the problem with getting people to take the vaccine isn't lack of trust, but lack of support from the White House.
Administration simply did not believe in testing, tracing, treatment, wearing masks, sanitation, separation, and the rest, scientific approach. It had come clear to us now that they believed in herd immunity, quackery, springing right from the Oval Office, and not denied sufficiently by some of the CDC and the rest. So now we have a vaccine, and that gives us hope.
Pelosi went on to complain about the Republican negotiators for the stimulus bill currently being debated on the House floor. Pelosi says the GOP wants to force certain essential workers to show up at their jobs, even if they're not safe.
Just in case anybody doesn't know, there are essential workers who are required to go to work. If they don't, because they're concerned about danger to their health and the health of their families, because the workplace is not safe, they cannot go on unemployment insurance. And if they go to work and contract the virus, they have no recourse, because that's the way the Republicans want it. That's the way the Republicans want it. It's so anti-worker. And just for good measure, they have thrown in certain aspects of the Civil Rights Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Fair Labor Standards Act, OSHA. The list goes on in Section 42 of their heinous liability bill of all of the actions that cannot be taken. I want to ask one of the Republican senators, what is the ADA, preventing the ADA to honor its response, Americans with Disabilities Act, to honor its responsibility? They said, why don't I have the Chamber of Commerce call you and tell you? I said, why don't you not waste my time or the Chamber's time about why the ADA should not be enforced because of the virus?
And the speaker mentioned Trump's demand to have his signature on a stimulus check, as he did last spring. She included shade about Trump's payment of only $750 in taxes.
The president may insist on having his name on the check, but make no mistake, those checks are from the American people. The American people's name should be on that check, no individual, because that is the source of the resources for those checks. Tax-paying Americans.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Millions of Americans could be at risk of being evicted in the next several months, despite state and federal protections aimed at helping them. In New York City alone, there have been nearly 30,000 private eviction filings since this summer. And a new Harvard study with the Movement Advancement Project says COVID-19 has negatively impacted LGBTQ households more than other households, especially if they're Black or Latinx. More than 1 in 8 LGBTQ households lost health insurance since the pandemic started, more than twice the rate of non-LGBTQ households. The study says 64% of LGBTQ households have lost a job due to the pandemic, compared to less than half of non-LGBTQ households. For Black people, that number is 95%, and for those who are Latinx, the number is 70%. And last week, government statistics showed nearly 900,000 workers signed up for unemployment insurance as job losses continue throughout the economy. Economist Jack Rasmus is author of several books, including Central Bankers at the End of Their Rope.
It's depression-level joblessness out there. There's a 40% increase in jobless filings in just 2 weeks, from 1 million to 1.4 million, and it's going to keep going higher. It's a crisis, a disaster. And what are they doing? They're throwing peanuts in this $900 billion so-called bill. They're throwing peanuts at people. $300 a week instead of $600 a week.
We went through one depression 80 years ago. Maybe they feel it's in their interest not to publicize the fact that the country is that vulnerable.
Look, 11.4 million people are behind on their rents. 11.4 million people, $70 billion behind on their rents. They're going to start getting evicted. This moratorium on eviction only applies to certain federally funded apartment buildings. The evictions are going to continue anyway, and it's only $25 billion. That's probably going to go to the landlords, and you've got $70 billion back rents that are going to have to be paid. You've got millions of public workers who had their payroll tax deferred back in August by Trump, who are now, January, going to have to start paying double payroll taxes. You've got 35 million students who are behind hundreds of billions of dollars in their student loans. Okay, so they extended that a couple months here. But they're going to have to start paying double come February, March. And the other thing about this bill is it's not a stimulus, you see. It's not going to stimulate the economy. It's a mitigation bill. It's designed to buy a couple more months, 2 to 3 months, a little bit. The Democrats are saying, oh, we'll come back for more here after Joe Biden gets confirmed here. Mitch McConnell is not going to let him have any more, especially if he wins those two seats down in Georgia. It's going to be no, no, no for 4 more years.
Trump lost, but he lost because every college student in America, every liberal came out in droves, but that they can't keep it going because the working class, who are the most affected by what you're saying, are breaking entirely for Trump.
It's not just the working class here. You can't blame the working class for it all. I believe the reason is this. Why did so many people vote for Trump? White European ethnic background Americans are terrified about the changes that have been coming in America. A majority almost here soon is going to be people of color. They're terrified not simply that they'll lose their jobs to the immigrants, which that whole group is people of color to white European Americans. They're afraid. They're afraid of the changes coming in America. And Trump and his minions have exploited that very cleverly to make them think that it's people of color who are already here or who are coming here, whether they're Muslim or whether they're Latin, Latino or Asian or Blacks here, whatever. These are the people who are taking away your America. And because of that, they see him as the bulwark against these cultural, social, political changes coming. And they will support this guy no matter what, because he is standing in the line, attempting to block the changes that are coming that can't be stopped.
What's the way out of this, if there is one?
We're headed for another contraction here in the first quarter of 2021. You're gonna see GDP and numbers collapse here in the fourth quarter. Economists are saying maybe 1%, 1.5% GDP growth after 7.4% in the third quarter and a negative 10.5% in the second quarter. In other words, the rebound has pretty much gone. There is no further growth. Most of the economy is service-based, and that's falling apart. It's going to be more of the last 8 years, especially the last 5 years, where McConnell and the Republicans just stop everything, not compromise in any way, and they're out to destroy the Democrats.
Economist Jack Rasmus is author of several books, including Central Bankers at the End of Their Rope. Closer to home, Senator Charles Schumer announced Sunday the coronavirus stimulus deal reached in Congress will include more than $4 billion in funding for the Metropolitan Transit Authority, the MTA. The agency has been struggling for funding since the pandemic hit in March. Daily subway ridership has been down about 70%. MTA Chairman and CEO Pat Foy says the stimulus funding will allow the MTA to get through 2021 without devastating service cuts and layoffs of over 9,000 colleagues. But Foy added the MTA still faces an $8 billion deficit. The agency has requested a total of $12 billion in federal aid to cover gaps through 2024. A new report finds the NYPD was caught off guard by the size and scope of the spring protests sparked by the killing of George Floyd. The report by the City Department of Investigation was released Friday. It says the cops resorted to aggressive disorder control methods, stoking tensions and stifling free speech. Police Commissioner Dermot Shea says he intends to incorporate the report's recommendations. A staff attorney with the Cop Accountability Project at the Legal Aid Society, Jen Vin Wong, says the report just says how far there is to go in making cops accountable, not how to get there.
The DOI report, on the one hand, validates a lot of what protesters had reported was happening on the ground. It was really lacking in stronger recommendations. Their policy recommendations and the changes that they proposed certainly don't go far enough, and they don't actually address the root causes of what drives that kind of police misconduct to begin with. That was rather disappointing.
The police department was not prepared for these protests when it's one of the main things they do is police protests.
New York City is a city that hosts a lot of protests in general. So many protests are centered within New York City. And to say that the NYPD wasn't prepared for protests, I think, is disingenuous. The report to me seemed to give credence to this line that the NYPD was giving about how the particular circumstances of these protests and the way that these protests organically sprung up actually caught them off guard. Part of what I would say I have to push back on, though, is that they have police protests. NYPD has police protests and large-scale demonstrations on a regular basis. The way that NYPD police protests is part of a pattern a lot of people have brought up, Occupy Wall Street and the RNC. The practices that they engaged in, whether we call it kettling or they call it encirclement, it's the same thing.
One reporter said a cop came to him and during one of these protests and said, this is the new normal.
It's really brazen, but I think also is really indicative of the kind of culture of impunity in which NYPD has operated in and has operated within for decades.
What's going on with the people who were arrested?
There are some people that are still facing charges. Many have seen their cases resolved, charges either dismissed by the DA's offices or reduced to violations. But there are still many that are facing more serious charges and accused of more serious conduct during the time of these protests. Given the multiple reports here that have shed a light on the kind of police misconduct and how that police misconduct contributed to the mass arrest should be considered by the district attorney's offices as they consider these remaining cases.
Is the NYPD totally politicized now?
Commissioner Shaver will maintain that the NYPD is not political. And yet what we see is NYPD leadership, not just their union leadership, but their actual leadership, like Commissioner Shea, speak out about particular policy issues in a way that politicizes those issues. We've seen it done earlier in the year and last year during the bail reform fight in the legislature. It would be disingenuous to say that the NYPD is apolitical. They are political, and they are concerned about the best interests of their members, their officers.
Political in the sense of that they're interested in their own members. So are they interested in there being more crime?
Why don't we take a look at how often NYPD has blown past their overtime budget? Because every year for the past couple of years, they have blown past that overtime budget by millions. And this year is no different than that.
Anything you'd like to add?
The DOI report just truly corroborated and validated what so many activists and organizers and advocates have been repeatedly saying this entire year about police brutality, about the kind of toxic culture that NYPD operates within and how NYPD operates with impunity, and how these protests and these protesters that took the street were demanding transformational change with respect to police brutality and police accountability. And it's time for city council to answer that call and to really reckon with what that means and what kind of radical reimagining of public safety is.
Do you expect that from the mayor?
From this mayor? I think that he has not shown himself to have much of a backbone when it comes to NYPD.
Jenvin Wong is a staff attorney with the Cop Accountability Project at the Legal Aid Society. And that's some of the news for Monday, December 21st, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. Reporting from New York City for the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.